And on this August 20th, there is actually news to talk about. Thank you, St. Louis, and to a lesser extent, thank you, Edmonton, and thank you, Columbus, thank you, Montreal, and of course, a thanks to the Amherst alumni for yesterday, despite Mother Nature not being super cooperative on a Monday.
Mother Nature was fine. Like, it just, it was fine when I started to golf after the show. I didn't golf prior to the show, and you walked around, and you got wet before.
Not that wet. I was just more disappointed for everybody the rest of the day. It was,
you know, what is disappointing is because that's a fantastic golf course, right? Cobblestone over there in Rochester. Fantastic. So to not get to play it with at least a dry, you know, good atmosphere to play it, it's tough. But everybody enjoyed it. Everybody was having so much fun after getting food, having a few drinks. So because it ended early. It's one of those tournaments. They started early around 10:30, I believe it was, the tea time. And then, so you're done middle of the afternoon. You don't have to stay up until 9, 10 o'clock at night. So, yeah, it was fantastic. So, yes. Thank you to the Amherst alumni for the great event. Thank you for NHL News, because it seems like all the GMs must be listening to our show, Duffer, because as soon as we take the team of the day, they have news coming up right after. Like, they basically are saying, yeah, we're not that good. We better get better, or we got to do something. So because of our great analysis, they've done things.
Because Marty picks the Sabres in every head-to-head series against whichever team has come through alphabetically. Nashville, by the way, is our team of the day, and they have lots of new shiny pieces to discuss. But while we were golfing, or trying to, or not really golfing at all, Columbus made a big splash yesterday, but sorry, I should phrase it the other way. Montreal made a big splash yesterday. We'll get to the Lionade deal in a minute. But the news that's been lingering for a week and is now finalized is, in fact, a rare development in NHL circles. Not one, but two offer sheets from the same team to the same team. St. Louis has hoisted two now former Oilers in the form of defenseman Philip Broberg and forward Dylan Holloway. So in return for drafting these kids, getting them into the NHL, sending them on their way, the Oilers get a second and a third round pick respectively. But of course, as we know, the Oilers have been tweaking their roster in the 7 days since these offer sheets were first presented, Marty. So take us through how you view a previous team of the day, the Edmonton Oilers now, and a still upcoming team of the day in St. Louis, who we'll get to down the road.
I'll start with the Oilers. You know, when we talked about the offer sheet last week and we talked to Shayna Goldman about it, my initial thought was, that's too much money for Philip Broberg. I mean, and now, you know, the reports by Ryan Rashad at TSN said that the Oilers offered Broberg $1.1 million a year for 2 years. He gets $4.5 million, right, for St. Louis. So is it a no-brainer for him to sign that offer sheet? Absolutely. But that just tells you where the Oilers valued Philip Broberg, a guy that played most of the season in the American League last year. They didn't think he was a $4 plus million player, probably more in the $2.5 million, I would say. They offered him 1-1, but hoping that it was going to come around the two and a half. So 4.5 was too much, and that's fine. But you moved on Cody Ceci now, and who do you got on defense? Because you're going to have to find somebody on defense. I'm going back to when we did our team of the day with the Oilers. Add Ekholm and Bouchard with Nurse and Broberg and Kulak and Ceci. So now you just lost two of your top six.
Right, but Ty Emerson's going to fill that role. He was fine with San Jose, and he comes in at $950,000. So I don't think that's a huge concern. Would they like to add a more significant piece? Yeah, sure. I mean, there are still UFAs out there. There are still RFAs out there. I mean, so
I thought the Oilers maybe jump in the offer sheet game right now, but they don't have their draft picks. They had zero draft picks until the sixth round in 2025 next summer, when they traded their own third draft pick away in the Cody Ceci trade to the San Jose Sharks on Sunday. they reacquired a second and a third from the St. Louis Blues, but they can't use those picks in offer sheeting anybody. So I'm thinking, if they want to add, maybe they'll do a trade. Maybe they'll just look for an unrestricted free agent that's, you know, still unsigned, or they're looking internally. Mm-hmm. They probably feel that with Ekholm and Bouchard and Nurse, they have a top three that they can feel comfortable with. So that's why they moved on from CC and now Broberg. Up front, I thought they were going to match Dylan Holloway, but this to me really smells like Stan Bowman and Jeff Jackson, the president of the team, is saying, you want to go out there and negotiate with other teams and whatever? Fine, go. You're replaceable. The only unreplaceable players on our roster are McDavid, Draisaitl, Bouchard, and maybe Stuart Skinner to a certain extent. But, you know, he better perform well. He did last year, you know, going all the way to the finals. But that's it. You're Dylan Holloway. Well, maybe they were going to offer him 1.5, 1.7, 1.8 million a year. You want 2.2 in St. Louis? Go. The door's open. Walk right into it.
Yeah, the Broberg thing, as I mentioned when it first happened, look, it was obvious that that's why St. Louis made this targeted move, because the Oilers have to invest in other pieces, especially on the blue line. So anyone with an ounce of common sense would know that Broberg would see whether he was valued at what you said the offer was to him, or even if it was closer to 2 to 3 million than what the Oilers think he should be paid. Broberg was, I mean, you can't pass, this is a lifetime opportunity, quite frankly, to get to this salary level this quickly in his career, despite the very few number of games played.
Yes.
Holloway, I mean, a good player, probably. Might work out nicely in St. Louis. I really don't think it's going to have that big of an impact. It's funny, it all seemed so surprising when it happened, because we don't see it very often. Yeah. And then now that it's done, I'm not kidding you. I was like, eh. Like, fine. I've not vaulted. Sorry to ruin the surprise when we get to St. Louis's team of the day, but I've not vaulted them into contender status because of these bold moves. And I certainly am not downgrading the Oilers from, you know, Final Four contention. So. Yeah.
You're absolutely right there. That's the perfect way to look at it. It didn't move the needle either way for either team. It was like a blah. And really, maybe this is where we're going. So since in the cap era, since the 2004-2005 lockout, we have seen 12 offer sheets, right? The first one was Ryan Kessler in 2006. Well, obviously, the second one was Vanek, right? Edmonton offering Vanek the Sabres match. But only 4 of the 12 have not been matched. And the last 3 offer sheets have not been matched. Yes, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, Montreal says, go ahead. The Oilers, these two, they said, go ahead. That may be the new approach now. Teams saying, you know what? Like, go ahead. We'll take the compensation. Players are replaceable. Mm-hmm. Players are replaceable, and that's what they're saying.
Okay, very quickly, since you said the Oilers have options now, presumably if Evander Kane goes on LTIR, they'll have upwards of $6 million to work with to bring in perhaps another veteran defenseman. If you were going through the list of unrestricted free agents, one of the first ones you would see would be Justin Schultz, but that ship sailed a long time ago between he and the franchise.
Hey, he had that opportunity before. That's not happening.
Kalen Addison, who just had a real up and downer last year through Minnesota and San Jose. Tyson Barrie has been there and done that with the Oilers. I can't help but wonder now, and correct me if I'm wrong, whether there's been news of his signing in another league or whatever, but can you imagine Tony DeAngelo there on the cheap in Edmonton? I could.
I could see that happening. I think that's what the Oilers are going to look at right now. And I'm trying to, again, I'm not all crazy familiar with Puckpedia to be able, I feel like I just put the parameters as, I should have done this. I did UFA no QOs, and that's not good. These are not the players I want. Like,
no,
guys, they didn't get qualified. So I understand why I'm like, none of these guys are popping up on my list, and I don't know why. So I could see a Tony DeAngelo being a fit there, because the Oilers are or have been the team that more than any other teams is saying, hey, we have Connor McDavid, we have Leon Draisaitl. These guys are going to come in and they're going to shut up and just play, right? Mm-hmm. They did that with Evander Kane. They did that with Corey Perry. And I could see a Tony DeAngelo, which Tony DeAngelo last year played 31 games at 11 points. Okay, he's had some success offensively. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's not what they need. But I could see a Tony DeAngelo going there. Other than that, I mean, it's a little bit tougher.
Right. So you might end up, you know, going back to trade potential. And I'll tell you what, a potential partner could very well be the Columbus Blue Jackets, because they now have a lot of young defensemen. Montreal still has a lot of young defensemen. So these are two teams that you know, could be, as far as, and let's be honest, Buffalo has a lot of defensemen. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, we just talked about, and I get it, like, not all of it is proven in the NHL, but they still have a lot of guys that are pretty highly touted. I think the Oilers obviously would be looking more for experience.
Robert Bertuzzo fit well there?
Didn't he retire?
Is he? That's what I was saying, because he's on the list, and I'm looking. I just did a quick search, but I don't know if he's retired or not.
I'm not sure.
But he only played 20 some games last year.
Hurt, but yeah. Anyway, deal with that in the commercial break. Don't let the cat out of the bag.
Okay.
So
that will be my big story coming up at the break. What is Robert Bertuzzo doing?
Yeah. St. Louis, again, we can save it for down the road. I think we've kind of made it clear. Good for them. They got their guys, whatever. I feel like in wake of the Columbus Montreal trade, that we were off target in our speculation as to what it might take. Yeah. Would you agree?
Well, I thought it was going to be,
I don't think
Columbus,
we sat here and lowballed, right?
Don Waddell said from the get-go, we have plenty of offers that have us retain salary and we don't want to do it. We don't want to do it. And Columbus didn't have to do it. So that was the number one thing that I thought was going to happen, was going to be retained salary.
They gave along with, like, Montreal got a top six winger and a second round pick for a defenseman who I like, but a defenseman they didn't need.
Yeah.
It feels like Montreal has 12 Jordan Harris's right now.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, and granted, some of them are much higher projections career-wise than Jordan Harris, but I think Harris is a good defenseman. I think he's fine. There's still no guarantees he's even going to make Columbus. So when you strip the trade down like that, it's like, holy cow, this
is on the depth chart.
This is
Dilly
found
face
money
off
for Montreal, man. Holy cow.
On the depth chart on Dilly Faceoff, they replaced Justin Harris with Jordan Barron. And that's based Justin Barron, like Jordan Harris with Justin Barron. I mixed their first name because they're interchangeable. Mm-hmm. Barron and Harris have been interchangeable for the last couple of years. Young players, good prospects. You know, they just said, okay, good. Harris is going to go and we're going to get Laine in a pick. And now, when we did Montreal, the team of the day, the numbers that really stuck out to me was that their top guys could score. Like Suzuki had a good season. Caulfield a little bit less. Slavkovsky a good season. A Kirby Doc maybe. But they were still 26th in goals for per game. And they were still 27th on the power play. And they needed to get better in those areas. Mm-hmm. And with Patrick Laine, all of a sudden, you know, Shayna Goldman always says he can still beat a goalie one-on-one. He can still beat a goalie clean. You just got to give him that, you know, have him somebody that can get him the puck in the right areas, and Laine will still score. He has not lost that touch. I think Montreal took a gamble, but it's a gamble in an area that they definitely needed somebody to come in and be able to add more goal scoring.
And if you do what a lot of people like to do, and that is, you know, like when an injured player comes back after the trade deadline, it's like, oh, this is your in-season pickup, right?
Yeah.
Well, rewind to last year's basically final 30 games. Montreal did not have Newhook. Mm-hmm. Montreal did not have Kirby Doc.
Yep.
And now they've got Patrick Laine. Are you telling me their top nine isn't going to be a lot better at the start of the year than what we saw in the back third of the season?
Listen, it was Christian Dvorak and Josh Anderson and Brent Gallagher, and it was trying to fit people like Josh Waugh and whatever. Like
Josh Waugh's got upside, I think.
He's got upside, but he's not Patrick Laine. He's not Kirby Dach. He's not Alex Newhook, right? Like, those guys definitely make your second line a lot better. And what last year offered up to Montreal was that, hey, place Slavkowski with Caulfield and Suzuki, and let's see what happened. Well, it gave them that, hey, our number one overall pick from 3 years ago is a legitimate top-line player, and he's starting to really play a type of game that we love. That those injuries allowed them to do that. So now there was a hole on my sheet, because it was Brendan Gallagher that was the second-line winger with Dach and Newhook, and now you have Laine. It's a huge upgrade for Montreal. Do they still... Does it move the needle so far to say they're going to be a team that is going to compete for the playoffs? I don't know. Their defense is young, yes, and their goaltending is question mark, but it's going to be the step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. What if they get Askarov?
Okay. I've never been a huge Askarov fan. I think
know.
There is some. So I think Montembeau is a good goaltender. Primo, you know what? If you brought in Askarov and you trade Primo somewhere else, because they're not going to go through the three goalies rotation like they did last year.
Trade him to Nashville.
Maybe they trade Primo to Nashville, and Primo becomes the number three in Nashville behind Saros and Wedgwood. But I think it would help. It would help Montreal to have that Montembeau-Askarov potentially tandem. I'm still very confused with Askarov, and we mentioned it on the show yesterday. Like, why is that coming out here at the end, towards the end of August? Go to camp, work hard, have your agent work the phones behind the scenes, whatever. Like, hey, he's not going to go to Milwaukee. Do you guys want him? Make that happen. But now that it's out, it's just going to, it's like this bad aftertaste, right? Of like this goaltender that has been good. It's a good prospect. Mm-hmm. Has he been all that everybody was hoping him to be? No. But he's good. He's a good prospect. And now you have that story come along. I just don't like that taste.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be fascinating in Montreal's crease if you had Askarov. And that's not to diminish Caden Primo. Caden has the exact same scenario in front of him as we're painting here with a potential Askarov Montembeau. Like, this is a massive opportunity for Caden Primo, who showed well at times. But that's why I pushed you on it last week. Like, I still don't think their tandem is anywhere near enough. I like a lot of their roster now. Why is it that you seem so, and obviously I presented it this way too. Like, you seem really confident in Laine, but what does that mean? Like, what do you think Laine is going to do in Montreal?
Well, that was going to be my next question to you is like, okay, how many goals does Patrick Laine score in
25,
Montreal if
minimum.
He plays? Okay, let's say he plays 75 games, right? Like, okay, a full season is really 82 games for all these players. They'll miss here, one in there. So let's say 75 games. Mm-hmm. I think he's scoring 30. I think even with, everything that was going on last year, he scored 6 goals in 18 games. That's a third of the way. So 75 games, that's 25. But I think if he plays 75, that's because he's doing well. That's because he's loving it. That's because he's getting, in a rhythm. It's 30. It's 30 goals minimum for Laine. And Slavkowski could get to 30. And all of a sudden, Caulfield is a 35-plus goals. And Suzuki's a 30. Like, you got four guys that could be 35 goal scorers in Montreal. Like, right there between those four guys is 140 goals. Last year, they scored barely 200 goals. I mean, that's a big jump for the Montreal Canadiens. So I think Laine, for me, he still had a 14.6 shooting percentage last year.
Right. Yeah.
His best year, when he scored 44 goals his second year in Winnipeg, he was 18%.
Mm-hmm.
I think if he's at 14.5%, 15%, it's 30 goals plus.
Why do you think he went so cheap?
Because Montreal was willing to take the full salary. There's other teams that could have, but I don't know that they wanted to. Montreal was willing to take the full salary. And Columbus, it comes a point where I know this may sound weird to other people, but when you're a GM, and then Duffer, you call me and you say, hey, you know, what are you thinking about line A and salary retention? I don't want to do retention. And then you call me again in a week. What do you think about line A and salary retention? I don't want to do retention. You call me again the week after. What do you think line A salary retention? I don't want to do it. At one point, I'm not taking your damn phone call. I'm like, stop with the salary retention. And then Montreal calls in the middle of it and they say, hey, we're willing to take it full price. And then maybe that team that was talking about salary retention could do full price, but I'm not calling you back, Duffer, because you wasted 3 minutes of my life is talking about salary retention when I told you I don't want to do it.
Thank you. Well, now that maybe fewer teams are calling Don Waddell and yes, he doesn't have to put up with the nonsense, what is Don going to do with his $18.2 million of cap space in Columbus?
Well, it's not going to happen this year. I think Don Waddell is going to take this year and he's going to say, I am going to kind of evaluate. And my first thought was, okay, how about you move Elvis Merzlikins now and you retain some salary on Merzlikins? Give him a chance.
Who's taking him?
Well, that's the thing. Who's taking him? The goalie market is so flooded. Again, it goes back to Askarov. Who's going to make that move? Maybe it's Columbus. Maybe it is, but Nashville's not taking Merzlikins to go with Saros, right? So I think that would be one thing that I would say, okay, now I could retain on Merzlikins to allow him. But Waddell says he likes Merzlikins. He wanted to trade for him in Carolina. So I think, having said that, next year they've got Johnny Gaudreau, they got Sean Monahan, they got Marchenko, they got Chinnikov, they got Ken Johnson. They got all these guys signed next year. Warinsky, whatever, like they're all signed. So go free agent market, big game hunting next year. But this year is going to be another slow year.
Do you remember? No, it can't be. Remember when we did Columbus team of the day?
Yeah.
Since their entry into the NHL, they're the worst team.
They're the worst team.
They don't make the playoffs often. Mm-hmm. They have to. This is a huge opportunity. Why? What could possibly be the downside of Waddell offer sheeting Jarvis?
Yeah.
Dider, Raymond, or Beniers? What could possibly be the downside of this? And I don't care if he goes up to that tantalizing little number. What is it, 11 something, where all of a sudden you have to give everything?
A first, second, like, a third, or two firsts. What, yeah.
Like, just do it. He's still going to have money left over.
Okay, so
I think the fan base needs this, right? I still have faith that Gaudreau can produce. Not like he produced with Tkachuk and Lindholm in the final year in Calgary. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen. But they do have a lot of good young forwards, but so many of them are still unproven. And we talked about how it looked last year, right? Why am I Fantilli, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, what a player. But if you're able to bring in a Seth Jarvis with Fantilli right now, and who knows what the heck happened in Carolina to cause Carolina to do Carolina things, but Waddell just left there. Throw him back an $11 million offer.
If anybody knows the inter-cap workings and what Eric Tolsky is going to do in Carolina, is Don Waddell. He's worked with him all these years, and he knows what's happening in Carolina. So I could see, but I be honest with you, if Columbus wants to do that, I don't think they'll do it. I think they're going to say, Waddell's going to say, I'm taking this year and next year I'm making my move, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But if he wanted to do his move this year, Don Waddell, I don't think it's one offer sheet. I think it's two, because you have the space, right? You have to find what the compensation would be. But if you offer sheet a Cole Perfetti, you know, maybe you lose a second round pick, and then as a first and a third that you can let go for something higher.
I feel like they have the Cole Perfettis of the world in their stable already. Don't you?
Yeah, I. But
they've got a lot of top five picks in the last 5 years.
I think Columbus, if they want to make a big splash and say we're going for it, like, you got to replace the Danforth and the Corelli. And you know, they've got the problem is they did their business. They went and got Monahan, and they went and, you know, they went and got players this year that if they had put themselves in that position to say, hey, we have all that cap space and we are going to go offer sheet somebody. They may have not done the Moynihan moves and all of that before.
But yeah, I agree. And to your point about the P word, and I hate it because, you know, patience. I mean, Guns N' Roses sang about it 20
they whistled
something years
about
ago.
It. They whistled about it. They didn't sing so bad. Yeah, they sang, but they whistled it.
All you need is.
Just a little. I
get it. Patience might be prudent here for Waddell. And I'm inclined to think, or I'm inclined to agree with you that he probably will push this down the road and manage this excess of cap. And the best part for him will be by then, he, in his first full year as general manager of this team, will have far stronger opinions on probably 7 to 10 of the young forwards that we talk about regularly when we talk about Columbus. So yes, that then will influence his move. So I get it. I think you're right. I'm just trying to have a little more fun in the final 3-4 weeks before the Prospects Challenge, of which Columbus is a part of it this year. So anyway, we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. But at the same time, I don't want them to do anything this year, because if they do, that's because it's another team that is going to be in that muddied water of teams that are trying to get into the playoffs, and it directly affect Buffalo, right? Like we've talked about it now. You know, you've got Florida, you got Toronto, you've got Tampa, Boston, Buffalo, Ottawa, Detroit, Montreal. That's your Atlantic division. How many of those are going to do? And then on the other side, it's very loaded as well. So I don't want to add one more team into the competitive teams out there.
Well, I got news for you. The waters are already muddy. So that's not going to clear itself in any of the next 5 decades. That's my guess. Anyway, you have Bortuzzo homework to do during the break. We've been told that the Flyers, this is directly from the Flyers, have placed forward Ryan Johansson. Now, this is weird. We're going to have to get more detail on it. They placed forward Ryan Johansson on unconditional waivers today for the purpose of terminating his contract due to a material breach. There were not many people who thought Ryan Johansson was really ever going to play for the Flyers anyway when they obtained the salary. But here and all, it's all done now between these two. So more on that coming up. And because I'm partial to the Predators and always have been, some fascinating numbers on our team of the day that last drew headlines on the 1st of July. That would be Nashville. And we're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Well, not nearly as entertaining a commercial break as when Shayna is coming on board, but it was an informative one. Marty and I did a lot of research. We've learned that Robert Bortuzzo, last of the Islanders, is still available.
Yeah.
At least I've not found a search that puts him in the retired category. So,
or cheap, too, and the Oilers could look that way.
Yes, the Oilers could look that way. That's why we were mentioning his name. Team of the day is Nashville. We'll get there. But a former Predator, Ryan Johansson, most recently found himself with Philadelphia, but the Flyers put out a statement saying that due to a material breach of his contract, they have put him on unconditional waivers for the purpose of terminating said deal. Now, all of the hockey insiders from their docks and or other places are chiming in that there's more to this story than the Philadelphia Flyers press release.
Yeah, well, TSN's Chris Johnson says that Johansson has 60 days to appeal the contract termination, which he will likely do so. Now, this is interesting. These are facts. Facts that in June, Danny Briere, GM of the Flyers, said that, you know, Ryan Johansson's going through some kind of rehab. He had an injection, claims he has a hip injury. At this point, honestly, I'm not too sure where it's at. We're not sure if he's going to need surgery, if he's going to be ready for camp or not. We really don't know. That was in June. Now, the speculation is going to start to kind of happen. Why? What is a material breach? What happens in a material breach? You know, who knows? Maybe Johansson decided to get a treatment that was not approved by the Flyers, and they said that's material breach right there, because treatments have to be approved by the team. We remember when Jack Eichel wanted a specific surgery. We learned that, you know what? Players don't control what surgeries or treatments they're getting. The only control they have is who is the doctor giving the treatments or doing the surgery. So if the Flyers didn't approve a certain treatment or a certain procedure to Ryan Johansson, they can say, we're walking away from the $4 million he was supposed to have. And that is going to affect our team of the day because the Nashville Predators have Ryan Johansson on a $4 million retained salary for one more year. So that could affect that as well.
What about Colorado?
Colorado basically had the $4 million. It was 50 Nashville, 50 Colorado, and they moved that on to Philly. So there's no other retained salary along the way.
Okay, so that sets us up for the Predators. And I'm actually really glad you mentioned Johansson. I don't know if I want to lead with it or not, but yeah, let's lead with it. Why not?
Okay.
All right.
Let's do it.
If the Predators were in the Olympics for this salary cap category, in what category would they be winning the silver medal?
The silver medal?
Mm-hmm.
Not the gold?
Not the gold.
It would be in, I want to say wrestling because they always find themselves in like weird positions and they have to twist themselves out of it and whatnot. So I'm going to say wrestling.
No, this is the dead cap Olympics and the Minnesota Wild are winning the gold as they have $15.8 million in dead cap this year.
I see.
The Nashville Predators are second with $11.8 million in dead cap, part of which belonging to Ryan Johansson. And there are now cousins in this mess. The Philadelphia Flyers have $11.69 million. Those are your podium finishers this year, entering this season in dead cap space. And the reason it's relevant is not only because of Ryan Johansson news moments ago, it's because despite almost $12 million in dead cap space this coming season alone, the Nashville Predators were the headline makers on free agent day. Stamkos, Marchessault, Shea. On the heels of this team making the playoffs yet again, Marty, Nashville has made it in 16 of their last 20 seasons in the NHL over the last 20 years. First overall in the regular season, Boston. Second overall, Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Third overall, Nashville in the last 20 years. You want to make it top five? Washington is fourth. Tampa is fifth. So Nashville is by far the best Western Conference team in the last 20 years of regular season play. And those five teams, only four of them have something in common. Boston won a cup. Pittsburgh won three. Washington won a cup. Tampa won three. Zero for the Predators, but even that won't diminish what I think of them and how consistent they have been.
I love the numbers on the Nashville Predators because you're right. They have, you know, all that retained salary, almost $12 million, and they added $22 million this summer in their cap, you know, free agent frenzy. That was a frenzy. Stamkos, eight. Marchessault, 5.5. Brady Shea, 7.5, I think that's what it is. And Scott Wedgwood, 7 for Brady Shea, and Scott Wedgwood, backup of UC Saros for $1.5 million. They also spend money on Saros, the long-term deal that starts in a year from now. So yeah, you know, our good friend Barry Trotz there, who was a very conservative type coach. Defense wins game. Let's not go out. He went all out with the wallet this summer in Nashville and went and acquired players. Nashville is a really good team. Now, funny enough, last year, the Nashville Predators were 11th overall in the National Hockey League, fourth in the Central. They make the playoffs. They had one run, one amazing run. We remember they didn't go to the U2 concert at Sphere in Vegas because Andrew Brunette was mad at the team for losing and getting the doors blown out at home before heading on the road. You guys are not allowed to go. And they went on to go 16-0-2 in the 18 games after that. If you take those 18 games out, I know, people, they count out of the 82. But the Nashville Predators were 31-30-3 away from those 18 games. Mm-hmm. Who are they? Are they the team that won 16-0-2 and 18? Or are they the other one that was literally, technically, two games under 500, in those 64 games?
Every team has a streak.
This is a significant streak.
Yeah, but they've had many of them. They have had many over the years, especially in the last handful of years. And again, their playoff pedigree, granted, they haven't won a round since 2018, but the fact that they continue to compete despite what some would say the odds being stacked against them because of, reputation, revenue streams, whatever, they don't come, they don't roll off the tip of everybody's tongue like the Colorados and Dallases and Vegases of the world. But they're there. In fact, they were a point ahead of Vegas this year to make the playoffs and came in the wild card spot and ultimately lost to Vancouver. And no, Vegas didn't fare much better, obviously. But no. I think they are. I mean, you mentioned Trotz. To me, he is in the driver's seat right now to be the GM of the year. Ending Jim Nill's run of two consecutive seasons, because I think the irony with me saying it that way is there may be some harsh criticism of Barry Trotz 4 years from now for how old his forward group got.
Yes.
And if they continue to underachieve in the playoffs. But here and now, I think it looks really good for Trotz and company. I really do.
You know what? Like that looking 4 years down the road or whatnot, I mean, you have to do it. You have to plan accordingly, but you have to win. You have to win now. And Barry Trotz realizes that. He wanted to be a GM. Barry Trotz had been wanting to be a GM for a long, long time. He was a coach and he kept coaching, but he kept his eyes on, I want to be on the top floor. I want to be a GM. I want to put the team together. Well, you got to win. If you're a first-time GM, you got to win. You got to do things to win, because if not, you're going to have one opportunity, and it's going to be Gonzo. You're never going to be a GM again. Barry Trotz wants to do that for the next 20 years. He wants to be Lou Lamoriello, which he worked with the New York Islanders. So here it is, Barry. Make it happen now. You'll fix it later. Lou always did that. Lou was always, how do I win now, and I'll fix it later. I'll figure it out later. And he's been successful at that.
And Barry, knowing the organization as intimately as he did, had a head start, perhaps, when it comes to player evaluation. And I dare say the easiest thing to do is walk into a situation where Roman Josi is your most identifiable player. Oh. He is as close to perfect as far as what else could a sports team want in a human being, let alone a quiet superstar. You follow that with a position of strength in goal. And thankfully, they got the very tough negotiation with Philip Forsberg done a couple of years ago. Yep. So you had a bona fide scorer. So the core was beautiful. And they've been able to make it work. They've got a lot of 30-somethings now. So the window is wide open in these next, I would say, 3 years for Nashville to absolutely do what they've only been able to do once. And that is get to the Stanley Cup final. They lost, of course, to Pittsburgh in that run of 16-17 where the Penguins won back-to-back times. But I think more than any other team, this trivia question is applicable for you as it pertains to the Nashville Predators' history in the crease. How many goalies, remember, they came in 98-99. How many goalies have actually worn a Predators jersey in an NHL regular season game?
Well, I can name a lot of them. Mike Dunham.
Well, let's get the list shortened down, and then you'll know how many you got to name.
I'm going to say 17.
22 goalies.
Ooh, I was close.
Have played in club history, but 11 of the 22, exactly half, have played 9 or fewer.
Yes.
So it's been on the back of the other
11. So the 11 goalies that have played 9 or more are obviously Pekka Rinne and Jussi Saros and Mike Dunham and Dan Ellis and Chris Mason. That's 5. I'm going to say, Kevin Lankinen, did he play 9 this year? So it'd be over. 9 or more. I'm named 5 out of 11. Oh, Anders Lindback? Did he play a bunch of games there because he came over here after?
Lindback played 38.
Okay, so yeah, so there's 6 of them. Man, now you're Thomas Vokoun, that's 7.
Yep. Lankinen played 35, but okay, 43, so that's 43 8. By the way. Yeah.
So I got 8 out of the 11 right now, and I'm going to beat myself up when I hear the other one. I'll let you go ahead.
You did Dunham. You did Ellis. You missed Carter Hutton.
Carter Hutton. Sutton. My goalie, Sutton. I should have known.
You said Lankinen. You said Lindback. You said Mason. You did not get Marek Mazanich.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that.
He played 25 back in 2017. Pekka Rinne, Jussi Saros, Thomas Vokoun, and last year, 2 years ago, Big Save Dave.
Big Save Dave Riddick.
17. And then the very, very, very infrequent Predators netminders include Yaroslav Askarov, Devin Dubnyk.
Yeah, he hated it. Oh my gosh. He got acquired to Nashville and then he got shipped to Montreal within like 48 hours. Barry Trotz had some strong words for Devin Dubnyk. Oh my gosh.
Eric Fischel, Brian Finley, Wade Flaherty, Magnus Helberg, Connor Ingram, Kazimir Kaskisuo, who had been in the Marlies organization, Jan Lasek, Michael Layton, former Sabre property. Yeah. Interesting.
You know what's funny is, again, like Nashville, what they've done is that from the start of the franchise, it was Mitch Korn that was there with Barry Trotz, and Mitch Korn had his goalie program, and it was not revolving doors. It was, we have our goalies, and we're going to work them, develop them, and they were successful. And now, who's back with Barry Trotz in the Nashville organization? It's Mitch Korn as the director of goalie, you know, the goalie department, and that team is going to make the right decisions in the crease again.
Just fascinating how many times they had a number two goalie ascend to number one, and then the next number two ascended to number. It was wild, actually, to watch it how it played.
It was a rotation, and a lot of those guys, the Dan Ellis and Chris Mason and whatever, they didn't do anything anywhere else. They were really successful in Nashville. Right. When they moved on, their career was almost like they're done.
And Mason's made an amazing career of Nashville. First as a goalie and now as a broadcaster. Honestly,
and Skillsy, it's been and our buddy Pete Weber and everybody up there.
Incredible ride. All right, Nashville team of the day. We'll wrap up Sabres Live after this. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Hey, Sabres fans. It's Uko and JJ from Prague. Follow us along for the next couple of days.
We're freuen uns riesig hier zu sein.
Well, a global series media tour for the Young Sabres. Our content team is over there, so follow our social channels for an awful lot more. And of course, when they get back here, we want you to see them and encourage you to get involved with mini packs this year. They are a great way to build out 5 games or more and save money, ultimate flexibility, enjoy great value, and you get the matchups that you want to see the most. Sabres.com/mini packs. Dan Vladar.
I have to go back to JJ's. I have to go back to JJ. What did he say in German? Because I have to go, Siri, can you translate, please? Because I have no idea what JJ said, but it sounded really good. It sounded like energetic. I love it.
I know. They look good. It's a good time of year. Obviously, the preseason will happen for the Sabres, not only here, but also in Germany, in JJ's homeland, before the regular season begins in Prague for Buffalo and their games against the Devils on October 4th and 5th.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And look, for those that, it's going to be a weird training camp because there's going to be an extended Rochester Americans training camp here in Buffalo because there's going to be all these preseason games with the team being overseas. So it's going to be interesting to be able to see some of the lesser known names really play more action in preseason.
And more time, undoubtedly, with our special guest from yesterday, and Michael Leone, right?
Yes, so
he'll have an awful lot to chew on in his first year with the organization. We'll see you tomorrow.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.